ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। Very. So I guess today we're going to discuss, or we are getting into fifth canto, and we're going to talk about the pastime of King Priyabrata. But then again, here the one point I want to discuss today is this kind of tension or dichotomy between sort of renunciation, or like let's say brahmachari life and grihastha life. So that's the sort of big topic in this beginning of fifth canto. But then again, here we can see that in this verse 5:5:18, a father, a husband, or mother, so they have to be able to actually liberate or lead their dependents to liberation. So from that we can see that actually being a husband or being a mother is a very heavy responsibility. Okay, so fifth canto, the first chapter, the story of King Priyabrata. So what happens is that up to the end of fourth canto, the there was discussion of descendants of Uttanapada, who is the son of who? Svayambhuva Manu. So Svayambhuva Manu and then his son Uttanapada, but then he had many other sons. And then another son was Priyabrata. So from Uttanapada came Dhruba, and then from Dhruba kind of descendants, many generations, and then comes Vina, and then comes King Prithu, and then after that again there is a description of many generations, and then comes Prachina Barhi Shat, very long name. And then there was this story, Narada Muni tried to kind of enlighten Prachina Barhishat by telling the story of King Pranjana, which is an allegorical story. And then from Prachina Barhishat comes Prachetas. So that was the end of the sort of discussion about the lineage coming down from Uttanapada. So now the story Bhagavatam goes to discuss the another son, Priyabrata. So he is a son of Svayambhuva Manu. And then so what's discussed at the end of the fourth canto and then up to the verse we cover today, which is 5:1:17. So up to that point, what happens? So basically, the King Priyabrata receives instruction from Narada, right? Sage Narada. So at the end of the fourth canto, this is conversation between Vidura and Maitreya. Okay. So it's Maitreya speaking, teaching, right? I suppose. So Maitreya kind of says, okay, now I finished talking about this lineage coming down from Uttanapada. So now hear about what happened with the descendants of Priyabrata. And Maitreya says, well, this King Priyabrata, he first was instructed by Narada, so he became very detached and he wanted to stay brahmachari, but then he did become grihastha, but then at the end of his life again he kind of renounced everything and then attained the highest consciousness. So then is it Vidura asking or Maharaj Parikshit? The Maharaj Parikshit, yeah. So actually, so this conversation between Maitreya and Vidura is narrated by Shukadeva Goswami to King Parikshit. So then, when Maharaj Parikshit heard this story, that Maharaj Parikshit asked, "Oh, how is it possible?" So question is, how is it possible if Priyabrata was enlightened and he was completely absorbed in Krishna consciousness, and then if he wanted to remain brahmachari, why did he become a grihastha? And then, so how is it possible for such a person to enter into grihastha life, which Prahlad Maharaj, for example, describes it's a dark well. So that's a very sort of heavy description of family life, which is there in Bhagavatam, no doubt. So Maharaj Parikshit, a question is that how can one go from one stage to another? So this first chapter, fifth canto, first chapter is answer to this question, like how can one who was so immersed in Krishna consciousness go into grihastha life? And basically the point here is that there is this tension between sort of remaining brahmachari or brahmacharini and entering into householder life. But then the ultimately one of the point here is that it's not really, the point is not really which ashram we are in, but then the point is whether how we are performing the duty in that particular ashram we are in. So King Priyabrata receives instruction from Narada, and then sort of he was kind of happy being brahmachari, but his dad is Svayambhuva Manu. So the Svayambhuva Manu is the ruler of the world. So when the time for Manu to retire to the forest, he wanted his son to engage in the service of being a king in this world. King Priyabrata did not want to take up that responsibility. He thought that was entering into family life and then also taking up responsibility as a king, he thought was too much entanglement. But then the Lord Brahma comes, who is the father of even Narada. And then Brahma comes down and then says, "Well, actually, it is your duty, so I request you to take up this responsibility." So even though Priyabrata's speech master, who was Narada, so even though Narada said that, well, you know, remaining brahmachari is, if you don't get entangled in this life, that's better. So even though that was sort of Narada's recommendation, Narada's superior, so the Brahma, comes down and then says, "Well, actually, I want you to take up this responsibility as a king," right? So eventually, Lord Brahma says that, "Well, actually, don't think I'm your enemy. Actually, whatever I say is, I'm a representative of the Lord. So whatever I say is actually a desire of the Lord. So it's not that I want you to stop your spiritual development, but then actually it is good for you to take up this responsibility." So one point we can see here is that ultimately, we do what we do Not so much because we enjoy, or not so much for our pleasure, but we should do whatever we do for the pleasure of Krishna. So here we see the example that even though for Priyabrata, it was actually in some ways easier for him to remain brahmachari. However, because it was the order of his param guru, his guru's guru, to take up this heavy responsibility, so he accepted. So it was not so much that Priyabrata was thinking, okay, now let's get into household life, let's get into ruling kingdom, and then let me enjoy as much as possible. It wasn't that sort of mood. It was almost that he was reluctant to take off, but then because it was order, that's how he take off. So what we do in Krishna consciousness may or may not be pleasing to us, at least may or may not be pleasing to our senses or to our ego, but that's part of our purification. So that's the duty. Okay, so then Priyabrata marries, and he had two wives, and from one wife he got 10 sons and one daughter, and then from his second wife he got 3 sons. Okay, so he had children and he ruled kingdom, and he was so powerful as to even there was this after this 17th verse we are covering, there is also the episode of him sort of even controlling the sun. He kind of didn't like the sun was kind of going north at one season and going south at another season. So he kind of chased after sun, and then he sort of provided or even sort of changed the daylights or whatever. So he was basically a very powerful king. But then at the end of his life, he kind of comes to senses and then say, wow, actually, in the beginning of my life, I was so absorbed in Krishna consciousness, but then somehow I took up this position as a king, and then now I'm so engrossed in this business, and now it's time to retire. So he relegates responsibility to his sons, and then he retires himself. Okay, so that's about the first chapter. So now let's cover the verse 17. But I want to read the word by word first, so that we know what we are reciting. So I do the synonyms first. So please repeat after me. Bhayam, fear. Pramattasya, of one who is bewildered. Vaneshu, in forest. Api, even. Syat, there must be. Yataha, because. Saha, he, one who is not self-controlled. Aste, is existing. Saha, with. Shatsapatnaha, 6 co-wives. Jitaindriyasya, for one who has already conquered the senses. Atmaratehe, self-satisfied. Buddhasya, for such a learned man. Grihashramaha, household life. Kim, what? Nu, indeed. Karoti, can do. Abhadyam, harm. Okay, so Now let's repeat the recite the verse. Bayam pramatasya bane shapisya. Yata saaste sahas shat sapatnaha. Jitendriyasya atma rater buddhasya. Griha shrama kim nukaroti abhadyam. Bayam pramattasya banesha visvyat. Yatasa aste sahashat sapatnaha. Jitendriyasya atma rater buddhasya. Griha shrama kim nukaroti abhadyam. Okay, please.
Bayam pramattasya banesha pisya.
Ladies,
Jitendriyasya atma rater buddhasya.
One more? No? Okay. So I read translation and I will ask you to read purport. Translation. Even if he goes from forest to forest, one who is not self-controlled must always fear material bondage, because he is living with six core vibes, the mind and knowledge acquiring senses. Even householder life, however, cannot harm a self-satisfied, learned man who has conquered his senses. So this is a part of Lord Brahma kind of coming down to Priyabrata and trying to persuade him to take up this position as a king. And then also being a king means that he would take up his wife and getting into household life. So basically Brahma trying to convince Priyabrata, well, actually, even when you take up this position, that don't worry that the you won't be entangled as long as your mind is controlled. Whereas even if you stay in Brahmachari in this forest, but if your mind is not controlled, then it's no point just sitting in solitary. It's actually not true renunciation. So this is part of Lord Brahma's sort of persuasion. Okay. So would anyone like to start reading purport?
Srila Narottama Dasa Thakura has sung Griva Vanate Thake Ha Gauranga Bale Dake. Whether one is situated in the forest or at home, if he is engaged in the devotional service of Lord Chaitanya, he is a liberated person. Here this is also repeated. For one who has not controlled his senses, going to the forest to become a so-called yogi is meaningless. Because his uncontrolled mind and senses are going with him, he cannot achieve anything, even by giving up household life and staying in the forest. Formerly, many mercantile men from the upcountry of India used to go to Bengal, and thus there is a familiar saying, if you go to Bengal, your fortune will go with you. Our first concern, therefore, should be to control the senses. And since the senses cannot be controlled unless engaged in the devotional service of the Lord, our most important duty is to engage the senses in devotional service. Shishikena, Shishikesha, Seva.
There is no need to fear their activities. The devotees in the Krishna consciousness movement move within this material world, but because their senses are fully engaged in the service of the Lord, they are always aloof from the material world. They are always living in a transcendental position.
Thank you very much. So I just repeat the translation again. Even if he goes from forest to forest, one who is not self-controlled must always fear material bondage because he is living with six co-wives, the mind and knowledge acquiring senses. Even household life, however, cannot harm self-satisfied learned man who has conquered his senses. Om Ajana Timirandasya Jananjana Shalakaya Chakshuramitam Jena Tasmai Shri Grave Namaha Panchakarpataru Vyascha Kripa Sindhiva Eva Cha Pattanam Pavane Vyo Vaishnavi Vyo Namo Namaha. So at the end of the purport, Prabhupada says that the devotee in the Krishna consciousness movement move within this material world, but because their senses are fully engaged in the service of the Lord, they are always aloof from the material world. They are always living in a transcendental position. So, the sort of suggested lecture title for today, according to this list, is how to How to be not of this world.
Right.
Okay. So how?
In this world, but not of it.
Yeah. So how to be in this world but not of this world? Meaning that we are here, we live here. It's not that we are somewhere in a dream, but we are here. We do go to school, or we do, you know, do service. We do have to eat and sleep or whatever. But we do that here. But then we are not of this world. We are not belonging to this material world in a sense that because whatever we do is in relation to Krishna. So therefore, it is transcendental. It is, how would you say? Oh, as we say, the Krishna, it's a karma free, right? The Krishna lunch is karma free. So whatever we do is karma free, if we do it for the sake of Krishna, if we do it as a devotional service. So how to be in this world but not of this world? And for the analogy comes to my mind from Gita is that he gives the analogy of lotus leaf and water on top, right? And because lotus leaf is waterproof, so to speak, so the water cannot stay there, right? So the water just goes off. So in the same way, for devotees, whatever the action of reaction of our action does not stay with us because it's a karma free activity, and actually that's what Krishna asked Arjuna to do. If you think about the Bhagavad Gita, at one level I mean, of course, ultimately, Krishna is asking Arjuna to do devotional service for him, but then what it means in concrete sense is that he has to kill his kinsman, right? And, I mean, that's a pretty heavy duty. So the one of the concern that Arjuna has in the beginning of Bhagavad Gita is that, well, you know, if I commit such a sinful activity, you know, I would be bound, you know, that would be such a heavy karma coming to me. But then the Krishna's point is actually, this is what I want. I want these people. These people are already eliminated anyway, so just be my instrument. Hmm? The nimitta matram baba sapya shachin. So just be my instrument and then accomplish what I want you to do. So from the chapter summary, in the chapter summary of this part, the Prabhupada says in the beginning, everyone is compelled to accept a certain type of body offered by the Supreme Lord and thus be allotted different grades of happiness and distress. Therefore, even if one artificially leaves home and goes to the forest, he again becomes attached to materialistic life. So again, we can remember what Krishna said to Arjuna in the battle of Kurukshetra. So Arjuna at one point in the beginning of, I think end of first chapter, he says, or maybe in the beginning of second chapter, he says, well, you know, it's better to beg the food than to eat the grain smeared by blood. So basically he wanted to kind of give up this duty as a kshatriya. Because he thought it was too heavy, and then goes to forest and then sort of live a life of renunciation. He thought that was better. But then Krishna says, well, actually, your nature is to be a kshatriya. So even if you go try to retire in the forest, but you won't be able to do that because, you know, you cannot tolerate, for example, then the people would say that actually Krishna says it's very Krishna says that if you escape, the people will call you what? Yeah. The people will call you eunuch. So then you won't be really able to tolerate such a blasphemy. And then you will come back and then fight anyway. So, you know, don't try to sort of give up, artificially, you know, you have to follow your nature, you have to follow your duty. So here Prabhupada says, therefore, even if one artificially leaves home and goes to the forest, he again becomes attached to materialistic life. So artificial renunciation is not what we are interested in. So in this context, the verse comes to my mind is this verse from 10th canto. I'm sure you know. So if you are familiar, please recite with me. Yen ye arabin daksha bimukta maninas tvai astababat abhishutta buddhayaha aruhya krishnena parampadam tataha patanti ado anadrita yusmat angurayaha. So this is one of the favorite verse Prabhupada quotes whenever he sort of criticizes the sort of renunciation done by Mayavadi philosophers. Basically, his point is that even though Mayavadi practitioners may practice renunciation, but because their renunciation is not based on attachment or not out of attachment to the devotional service to the Lord, so therefore, even though they may attain very high exalted state, eventually they come back. So ye nye arabindaksha vimukta maninas. So ye anye. So whoever arabindaksha or Krishna vimukta maninas, the manin, those who are proud, the mana is proud, right? So those who are proud of vimukta, their liberated state. But their avishuddha buddhayaha, so their buddhi, their intelligence is avishuddha, avishuddha. So vishuddha is sattva, rajas, tamas, but then vishuddha is beyond these three modes of nature. So vishuddha sattva is the pure transcendental, but avishuddha, not pure. So their intelligence is not pure. Because tvayasta bhavat, the their bhava, their attachment to you, tvayi, is asta, is kind of set aside. So the Mayavadi philosophers, for them, tatvamasi, or aham brahmasmi, means I am Krishna. Ultimately, that's what they want to achieve. I am Krishna. So, I am Narayan, Narayan, Narayan. So that's eventually what they want to achieve. So for them, it's not devotion to Krishna, but then they want to become Krishna, right? So ultimately, their bhava, attachment to Krishna, is asta, set aside. So therefore, aruhya krishnena parampadam. So they go up to highest abode, krishnena, by making a lot of austerity, by making a lot of effort. But then, tataha, from there, right? From there, we did this, right? The adverbial, usage, from there, tataha. So from that parampadam, the highest abode, patantiado, they fall down. Why? Because anadrita yusmat angriha. So the angri is the toe. So, or the feet, or the toe, the yusmat angreha, so the your toe, and then anadrita, unfixed. So, why? Because for them, they haven't fixed their mind onto your lotus feet. So because they haven't fixed their mind into your lotus feet, meaning to Krishna's lotus feet, so therefore, they are not engaged in devotional service, even though they're performing rigorous austerity, but that's not devotional service. And then because they're not attached to Krishna consciousness, or they're not doing austerity, as a service to Krishna, therefore their intelligence is polluted. And then because of that pollution, they will come down eventually. The Prabhupada says that at some point, even though they may attain liberation, they get bored. You know, they have nothing to do. They just, they have nothing to do. They because they're not engaged in devotional service, they get bored. So then afterwards, they come back and then, they engage in the activity in the world. Such as philanthropic activities, I guess which is still, I mean, not bad, I mean, in relation to materialistic activities, but then it's not the highest activity, so to speak. So they come down, I guess the Prabhupada's point here is that they come to platform of sattva. So activities, Prabhupada criticized, so these sannyasis, they build hospitals, set up the schools, and engage in philanthropic activities. So Prabhupada's point is that, well, it's not that these activities are bad, but in these activities are in the mode of goodness. So it's at least in the mode of goodness, but then it's not transcendental. Okay? So it's still kind of tinged with the mode of nature. So they fall down. So as Prabhupada says in this purport, that he quotes Rupa Goswami, ihayasya haryodasya karmana manasagira, right? So those who are engaged in the service of the Lord by action, karmana, by mind, manasa, and then by words, gira. So in order to remain up there in Parampadam, the highest abode, we need to be engaged in devotional service. So also in the, we remember from Bhagavad Gita 10:10, the Dadhami Buddhi Yogantam, yeah? Yenamam Payantite. So I give the intelligence to devotee by which they can come to me. But then I give, the Krishna says, I give that intelligence only to those who are, what, the beginning? Ah. Very good. So those who are constantly engaged in devotional service with love. And with love, this Priti Purvakam, with love, that's the point, right? The one point I think is important here is that again, it's of course the point is to perform devotional service, but then when we say we perform devotional service, what's important is here Priti Purvakam. You have to do it with love. Why? Because Krishna is Bhava Grahi Janardana, right? So he grasped the Bhava. Again, we saw that in the verse, Tvayasta Bhava Avishuddha Buddhayaha. So the reason why the Mayavadi people fall down is because they give up this Bhava to you, the attachment to you, right? So, what matters is it's not so much what we do, but how we do it. Because actually Krishna is self-satisfied, and then he is omniscient, I'm omnipresent, I'm omnipotent. So he's not really needing to be fed by us, but he wants to be fed through love, with love. And what he's interested in is that love, right? So, but if we do devotional service, thinking, ha, see, how glorious I am, right? I'm so detached. I'm doing so many services. I've distributed so many books, or let's say, I know so much Sanskrit. I can recite so many verses. I'm cleaning up from morning to evening. Look how detached I am. So if we become proud of what we do, then actually, Krishna is not so interested in. There is, interesting story that my Guru Maharaj, Sachinandana Maharaj, once related. There was a king called Devendra, and he was a very powerful king, right? But one day, he was so busy with his royal duty, and he thought, why am I so busy? Why do I have to do so many things, you know? Where is God? Like, what's he doing? So he became curious what God is doing. Okay? So he asked his minister, hey minister, I want to know what God is doing because I'm so busy and I don't know why I have to do so many things. So find out. I will give you 1 week. if you don't come up with 1 week, you're fired. So the minister went to search in the library, look up many shastras, tried to find what God does every day, right? I mean, of course, he knew God is the creator, maintainer, blah, 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 but the king wanted to know what he does now, right? What he does today. So So our minister went through many shastras, he went to pandits and asked, but no one could answer, he couldn't find any book. So kind of day was passing, and then the sixth day he thought, well, I can't really find it, so before he fires me anyway, maybe better I leave. Okay? So he decided to escape. And he was kind of leaving his country because he was afraid of his king. But on the way, he met the sort of young boy, small boy, kind of looking very kind of simple village boy. And this village boy kind of talked to him and he said, "Excuse me, sir, you look very distressed. What's wrong?" And the minister said, "Well, you know, what do you know about my heavy responsibility?" But then the boy said, "Well, anyway, what's wrong? Tell me." And then the king said, "Well, actually, I'm a minister of this king of this kingdom. But then my boss, the king, asked me to find out what God does today, but I can't really find it. So before he fires me, I'm escaping from his anger." So then boy says, "Well, actually, I know the answer. So take me to your king." And the minister says, "Well, really?" But the minister thought, "Well, maybe. Let's give it a try, right?" So the minister brings the boy, this simple village boy, and the minister says, so the king says, "Okay, so did you find the answer?" And the minister says, "Well, I didn't quite, but I found this boy, and he knows the answer." And then the king looked at this boy and says, and he looked at the minister, "Are you sure?" And the minister is kind of, but then king says, "Okay." And then king says, "Okay, tell me, boy, tell me, what do you know? What does God do right now, today?" And then the boy says, "Well, actually, you are asking me questions. So that means I am the teacher, so you are a student. So you get off your position." He was sitting at the high chair, right? So the king says, "Okay, but you better know the answer, okay? Otherwise..." So king steps down from his chair, and then the boy goes up to his chair, the king's royal throne, and he just sits, and he starts kind of enjoying, kind of relaxed, right? So he gets relaxed. You know, he kind of looks around. He just... "So, it's a very nice seat you have, right?" And then king gets very impatient because king is now standing down there. So the king demands, "So, what is the answer? You better answer my question. What does God do right now?" And the boy says, "Well, actually, I've shown you already." And then king says, "What? You haven't said anything yet." And then boy goes, "You haven't realized yet?" And then king says, "What?" And then boy said, "Actually, what the God does is to put down those who are proud and take up those who are simple and meek." Okay? So, and then actually, of course, this boy was Krishna himself. So, Krishna is not interested in what we do, if we become proud of our even so-called devotional service. As soon as we become proud, then we, I'm sure many of us experience, as soon as we become proud of our achievement or our so-called devotional service, then he kind of slap your face, your cheek, and reminds you that actually it's devotional service is not for our purpose, not for our sense gratification, not for our pride, but then actually devotional service is for the sake of Krishna. So we, for example, this month we're going to have this Govardhan Puja, right? But then who is the person who kind of harasses the Indra, right? So the Indra Dev is so powerful that sometimes the demigods forget their position as a servant of the Lord. So he lost the vision that he was doing whatever he was doing for Krishna. So when Krishna actually, you know, suggests the village people to offer sacrifice to Govardhan Hill instead of Indra, Indra cannot recognize who Krishna was. So he gets angry. But then eventually he realizes Krishna's position. So that was the Indra. And then also there is Brahma Bimoha Lila, right? So there Lord Brahma steals the cows and cowherd boys because he couldn't recognize who Krishna was. So I guess the point I wanted to make today was so in the context of this first chapter of fifth canto, there is this dichotomy of remaining brahmachari or getting into grihastha ashram. But then ultimately, the point is that whatever ashram we are in, if we become proud of our status or what we do, then that's no longer a devotional. And then there's this very nice story in Chobari Temple that when Radhanath Maharaj went to Chobari Temple first time, in the beginning stage, there was the kind of tension between brahmacharis and grihasthas. And because grihasthas thought, well, you know, these temple devotees, temple brahmacharis and brahmacharinis, you know, they're useless. They're kind of useless bums, you know, just staying in the temple, not working, you know. Whereas the brahmacharis thought, well, these grihasthas are greedy, you know, working outside and they're contaminated. So they're kind of, you know, despising each other. But then the Radhanath Maharaj went to grihastha people and then praised the brahmacharis. Oh, such and such Prabhu is so renounced. He's engaged in full devotional service, you know, from morning. He never misses Mangalarti. He goes to book distribution. He gives class. He cooks. He's wonderful. So for grihastha people, he started praising brahmacharis. And then when he went to brahmacharis, he started praising grihasthas. Oh, such and such Prabhu, you know, he has family. He has such a heavy responsibility, but he keeps his Krishna consciousness intact and his children are wonderful. He's such a wonderful devotee. So, and then gradually, kind of they started to respect each other because Maharaj kind of praised the other camp, right? So eventually what matters is how we do this, how we are doing this devotional service. But then this bhava is very private affair. It's between you and Krishna, right? So also the story I like from the Bible that you know, once there was a very, I think it was woman, poor woman came to temple and then gave some small money, right? And then after that, some rich man came and, you know, he gave a lot of money. But then Jesus said, no, that actually the God is pleased more with this poor lady who gave like half of his half of her income, even though that was a very small amount, but that's more pleasing, whereas the God is not so pleased with this proud, rich man who just gives, I mean, a lot of money, but then still for him, it's just nothing, right? So again, that bhava is between you and Krishna. So between one devotee and Krishna. So we should never become judgmental to what other people are doing. We may think, oh, you know, he just comes to temple maybe once a week, or she comes to temple once a week, or she doesn't do much or whatever. But then who knows? Maybe he has children, he has full-time job, or she has, you know, crying baby at home. So for her to come to temple even once a week is a lot of endeavor. So maybe from Krishna's perspective, you know, coming to temple once a week for a struggling mother, maybe that's even more pleasing than a single student coming to temple every day, right? So we never judge other people. And then also, we shouldn't worry too much about what other people say about ourselves, okay? And then I like this, my Guru Maharaj said, what my Guru Maharaj said, the Krishna consciousness is not about what other people do or do not do, but it's about transformation of our consciousness. So again, it's Krishna consciousness. Ultimately, it's not what we do externally, but how we do it internally. So I would like to end today's class with the, I guess you can call it poetry, which is often attributed to Mother Teresa. I'm sure many of you know. So this is from Mother Teresa. People are often unreasonable, illogical, and self-centered. Forgive them anyway. Oh, this is, by the way, it's called Do It Anyway. If you're kind, people may accuse you of selfish ulterior motives. Oh, no, people may accuse you of selfish ulterior motives. Be kind anyway. If you're successful, you will win some false friends and true enemies. Succeed anyway. If you're honest and frank, people may cheat you. Be honest anyway. What you spend years building, someone could destroy overnight. Build anyway. If you find serenity and happiness, they may be jealous. Be happy anyway. The good you do today, people will often forget tomorrow. Do good anyway. Give the world the best you have, and it may never be enough. Give the world the best you've got anyway. You see, in the final analysis, it is between you and God. It was never between you and them anyway. So I end my class here. Thank you very much. So if you have any question or comments. This Yenye Aravindaksha Vimukta Maninas, that's 10 to 32. Yeah, 10 to 32. Very often.
What's that?
Prayers of the demigods of the Lord Krishna.
Oh, I see. Yeah.
First of all, thank you very much. That was a really nice class, and I appreciated your points. And the, just to clarify, when at the end of the fourth canto, Vidura and Maitreya parted company. That's why the speakers change. Vidura thanked Maitreya very feelingly. He was feeling very ecstatic, and then he went up to the Himalayas, and that takes place just at the end of the fourth canto. So therefore, now in the fifth canto, it switched back to Sukadeva and Parikshit speaking. I just wanted to clarify that. That's, thank you.